10. Philby did not stay an assistant junior fire controlman. Jerry moved up to astrogation trainee. Maida took charge of the starboard room, and Philby was officially posted as the new starboard junior fire controlman, with life and death in his forefinger. He was not sure that he liked it. Then that arrangement tumbled almost as quickly. Locean is a safe planet, inhabited by civilized non-humans. It is a port safe from ground raids. No dirtside defensive watches were necessary. Men could leave the ship for pleasure, and even women could do so. Some of the women aboard had not left the ship, save at gatherings of the people, since being exchanged to Sisu as girls. Locean was to Thorby his first foreign land, Jubal being the only planet clear in his memory. So he was very eager to see it. But work came first. When he was confirmed as a fire controlman, he was transferred from hydroponics into the junior vacancy among the supercargo's clerks. It increased Thorby's status. Business carried more prestige than housekeeping. Theoretically, he was now qualified to check cargo. In fact, a senior clerk did that while Thorby sweated, along with junior male relatives from every department. Cargo was an all-hands operation, as Sisu never permitted stevedores inside, even if it meant paying for feather bedding. The Locians have never invented tariff. Crated bales of virga leaves were turned over to purchaser right outside the ship. In spite of blowers, the hold reeked of their spicy, narcotic fragrance and reminded Thorby of months past and light years away, when he had huddled, a fugitive in danger of being shortened, into a hole in one crate while a friendly stranger smuggled him through the Sargon's police. It didn't seem possible. Sisu was home. Even as he mused, he thought in the family's language. He realized with sudden guilt that he had not thought about Pop very often lately. Was he forgetting Pop? No, he could never forget. Not anything. Pop's tones of voice, the detached look when he was about to comment unfavorably, his creaking movements on chilly mornings, his unfailing patience no matter what. Why, in all those years, Pop had never been angry with him. Yes, he had. Once.
"I am not your master."
Pop had been angry that once. It had scared Thorby. He hadn't understood. Now, across long space and time, Thorby suddenly understood. Only one thing could make Pop angry. Pop had been explosively insulted at the assertion that Baslin the Cripple was master to a slave. Pop, who maintained that a wise man could not be insulted, since truth could not insult and untruth was not worthy of notice. Yet Pop had been insulted by the truth, for certainly Pop had been his master. Pop had bought him off the block. No, that was nonsense. He hadn't been Pop's slave. He had been Pop's son. Pop was never his master, even the times he had given him a quick one across the behind for goofing. Pop was just Pop. Thorby knew then that the one thing that Pop hated was slavery. Thorby was not sure why he was sure, but he was. He could not recall that Pop had ever said a word about slavery as such. All Thorby could remember Pop saying was that a man need never be other than free in his own mind.
"Hey," the supercargo was looking at him,
"sir?
Are you moving that crate or making a bed of it?"
3 local days later, Thorby had finished showering, about to hit dirt with Fritz, when the deckmaster stuck his head in the washroom, spotted him, and said,
"Captain's compliments, and Clerk Thorby Baslam Krause will attend him."
"Aye, aye, deckmaster," Thorby answered, and added something under his breath. He hurried into clothes, stuck his head into his bunkie, gave the sad word to Fritz, and rushed to the cabin, hoping that the deckmaster had told the captain that Thorby had been showering. The door was open. Thorby started to report formally when the captain looked up.
"Hello, son. Come in."
Thorby shifted gears from ship to family.
"Yes, father."
"I'm about to hit dirt. Want to come along?"
"Sir?
Yes, father. That'd be swell." "Good. I see you're ready. Let's go."
He reached in a drawer and handed Thorby some twisted bits of wire.
Here's pocket money. You may want a souvenir.
Thorby examined it. What's this stuff worth, Father?
Nothing, once we're off Lothian.
So give me back what you have left so I can turn it in for credit. They pay us off in thorium and goods.
Yes, but how will I know how much to pay for a thing?
Take their word for it. They won't cheat and won't bargain.
Odd ones,
Not like Lotarf. On Lotarf, if you buy a beer without an hour's dickering, you're ahead.
Thorby felt that he understood Lotarfi better than he did Lothian's. There was something indecent about a purchase without a polite amount of dickering. But Fracky had barbaric customs. You had to cater to them. Sisu prided herself on never having trouble with Fracky.
Come along, we can talk as we go.
As they were being lowered, Thorby looked at the ship nearest them. Free trader El Nido, Garcia clan. Father, are we going to visit with them?
No, I exchanged calls the first day.
I didn't mean that. Will there be any parties?
Oh! Captain Garcia and I agreed to dispense with hospitality. He's anxious to jump. No reason why you shouldn't visit them, though. Subject to your duties.
He added,
Hardly worth it. She's like Sisu, only not as modern.
Thought I might look at her computer rooms.
They hit ground and stepped off.
Doubt if they'd let you. They're a superstitious lot.
As they stepped clear of the hoist, a baby Lothian came streaking up, circled, and sniffed their legs. Captain Krause let the little thing investigate him, then said mildly,
That's enough,
and gently pushed it away. Its mother whistled it back, picked it up, and spanked it. Captain Krause waved to her, called out,
Hello, friend.
Hello, tradesman,
she answered in interlingua, shrill and sibilant. She was two-thirds Thorby's height, on four legs, with four limbs elevated. The baby had been on all six. Both were sleek and pretty and sharp-eyed. Thorby was amused by them, and only slightly put off by the double mouth arrangement, one for eating, one for breathing and talking. Captain Krause continued talking.
That was a nice run you made on that Lothian craft.
Thorby blushed. You knew about that, Father?
What kind of a captain am I if I don't? Oh, I know what's worrying you. Forget it. If I give you a target, you burn it. It's up to me to kill your circuits if we make friendly identification. If I slap the God-be-thanked switch, you can't get your computer to fire. The bombs are disarmed. The launching gear is locked. The chief can't move the suicide switch. So even if you hear me call off the action, or you get excited and don't hear, it doesn't matter. Finish your run. It's good practice.
Oh, I didn't know, Father.
Didn't Jerry tell you? You must have noticed the switch. It's the big red one, under my right hand.
I've never been in the control room, Father.
Eh? Well, I must correct that. I might belong to you someday. Remind me, right after we go irrational.
I will, Father. Thorby was pleased at the prospect of entering the mysterious shrine. He was sure that half of his relatives had never visited it, but he was surprised at the comment. Could a former Fracky be eligible for command? It was legal for an adopted son to succeed to the worry seat. Sometimes captains had no sons of their own, but an ex-Fracky? Captain Krause was saying,
I haven't given you the attention I should, son. Not the care I should give Baslam's son. But it's a big family, and my time is so taken up. Are they treating you all right?
Why, sure, Father.
Glad to hear it. Well, you weren't born among the people, you know.
I know. But everybody has treated me fine.
Good. I've had good reports about you. You seem to learn fast for a... You learn fast.
Thorby sourly finished the phrase in his mind. The captain went on.
Have you been in the power room?
No, sir. Just the practice room once.
Now is a good time. While we're grounded, it's safer, and the prayers and cleansing aren't so lengthy.
Krause paused.
No, we'll wait until your status is clear. The chief is hinting that you're a material for his department. He has some silly idea that you will never have children anyway, and he might regard a visit as an opportunity to snag you. engineers.
Phoebe understood this speech, even the last word. Engineers were regarded as slightly balmy. It was commonly believed that radiations from the artificial star that gave Sisu her life ionized their brain tissues. True or not, engineers could get away with outrageous breaches of etiquette. Not guilty by reason of insanity was an unspoken defense for them once they had been repeatedly exposed to the hazards of their trade. The chief engineer even talked back to grandmother. But junior engineers were not allowed to stand power room watches until they were no longer expected to have children. They took care of auxiliary machinery and stood training watches in a dummy power room. The people were cautious about harmful mutations because they were more exposed to radiation hazards than were planet dwellers. One never saw overt mutations among them. What happened to babies distorted at birth was a mystery so taboo that Thorby was not even aware of it. He simply knew that power watchstanders were old men. Nor was he interested in progeny. He simply saw in the captain's remark a hint that the chief engineer considered that Thorby could reach the exalted status of power watchstander quickly. The idea dazzled him. The men who wrestled with the mad gods of nuclear physics held status just below astrogators, and, in their own opinion, higher. Their opinion was closer to fact than was the official one. Even a deputy captain who attempted to pull rank on a man standing power room watches was likely to wind up counting stores while the engineer rested in sick bay, then went back to doing as he pleased. Was it possible that an ex-frackie could aspire to such heights? Perhaps someday be chief engineer and sass the chief officer with impunity? Father, Thorby said eagerly, the chief engineer thinks I can learn power room rituals?
Wasn't that what I said?
Yes, sir. I wonder why he thought so.
Are you dense?
Or unusually modest? Any man who can handle fire control mathematics can learn nuclear engineering, but he can learn astrogation, too, which is just as important. Engineers never handled cargo. The only work they did in port was to load tritium and deuterium, or other tasks, strictly theirs. They did no housekeeping. Father, I think I might like to be an engineer.
So? Well, now that you thought so, forget it. But what?
Nothing, sir. Yes, sir. Krauss aside.
Son, I have obligations toward you. I'm carrying them out as best I can.
Krause thought over what he could tell the lad. Mother had pointed out that if Baslam had wanted the boy to know the message he had carried, Baslam would have put it in interlingua. On the other hand, since the boy now knew the family language, perhaps he had translated it himself. No, more likely he had forgotten it.
Thorby, do you know who your family is?
Thorby was startled. Sir, my family is Sisu.
Certainly. I mean your family before that.
You mean Pop? Baslam the cripple?
No. He was your foster father, just as I am now. Do you know what family you were born in?
Thorby said bleakly. I don't think I had one.
Krause realized that he had poked a scar, said hastily, Now, son, you don't have to copy all the attitudes of your messmates. Why, if it weren't for Fracky, with whom would we trade? How would the people live? A man is fortunate to be born people, but there is nothing to be ashamed of in being born Fracky. Every atom has its purpose.
I'm not ashamed.
Take it easy.
Sorry, sir, I'm not ashamed of my ancestors. I simply don't know who they were. Why, for all I know, they may have been people.
Krause was startled. Why, so they could have been, he said slowly.
Most slaves were purchased on planets that respectable traders never visited, or were born on estates of their owners, but a tragic percentage were people, stolen by raiders. This lad, had any ship of the people been lost around the necessary time? He wondered if, at the next gathering, he might dig up identification from the Commodore's files. But even that would not exhaust the possibilities. Some chief officers were sloppy about sending in identifications at birth. Some waited until a gathering. Mother, now, never grudged the expense of a long end-space message. She wanted her children on record at once. Sisu was never slack. Suppose the boy were born people and his record had never reached the Commodore. How unfair to lose his birthright. A thought tiptoed through his brain. A slip could be corrected in more ways than one. If any free ship had been lost, he could not remember. Nor could he talk about it. But what a wonderful thing to give the lad an ancestry. If he could, he changed the subject.
In a way, lad, you were always of the people.
Huh? Excuse me, father?
Son, Vaslim the Cripple was an honorary member of the people.
What? How, father? What ship?
All ships. He was elected at a gathering. Son, a long time ago a shameful thing happened. Vaslim corrected it. It put all the people in debt to him. I've said enough. Tell me, have you thought of getting married?
Marriage was the last thing on Thorby's mind. He was blazingly anxious to hear more about what Pop had done that had made him incredibly one of the people. But he recognized the warning with which an elder closed a taboo subject.
Why, no, father.
Grandmother thinks that you have begun to notice girls seriously.
Well, sir, grandmother is never wrong, but I hadn't been aware of it.
A man isn't complete without a wife, but I don't think you're old enough. Laugh with all the girls and cry with none, and remember our customs.
Krause was thinking that he was bound by Baslam's injunction to seek aid of the hegemony and finding where the lad had come from. It would be awkward if Thorby married before the opportunity arose, yet the boy had grown taller in the months he had been in Sisu. Adding to Krause's fret was an uneasy feeling that his half-conceived notion of finding, or faking, an ancestry for Thorby conflicted with his unbreakable obligations to Vaslim. Then he had a cheerful idea.
Tell you what, son, it's possible that the girl for you isn't aboard. After all, there are only a few in port side Perda, and picking a wife is a serious matter. She can gain you status or ruin you. So why not take it easy? At the great gathering, you'll meet hundreds of eligible girls. If you find one you like, and who likes you, I'll discuss it with your grandmother, and if she approves, we'll dicker for her exchange. We won't be stingy, either. How does that sound?
It put the problem comfortably in the distance.
It sounds fine, father.
I've said enough.
Krause thought happily that he would check the files while Thorby was meeting those hundreds of girls, and he need not review his obligation to Baslam until he had done so. The lad might be a born member of the people. In fact, his obvious merits made Fracky ancestry almost unthinkable. If so, Baslam's wishes would be carried out in the spirit, more than if followed to the letter. In the meantime, forget it. They completed the mile to the edge of the Lozian community. Thorby stared at sleek Lozian ships, and thought uneasily that he had tried to burn one of those pretty things out of space. Then he reminded himself that Father had said it was not a fire controlman's business to worry about what target was handed him. When they got into city traffic, he had no time to worry. Lozians do not use passenger cars, nor do they favor anything as stately as a sedan chair. On foot, they scurry twice as fast as a man can run. In a hurry, they put on a vehicle which makes one think of jet propulsion. Four, and sometimes six limbs, are encased in sleeves which end in something like skates. A framework fits the body and carries a bulge for the power plant. What sort, Thorby could not imagine. Encased in this mechanical clown suit, each becomes a guided missile, accelerating with careless abandon, showering sparks, filling the air with ear-splitting noises, cornering in defiance of friction, inertia, and gravity, cutting in and out, never breaking, until the last minute. Pedestrians and powered speed maniacs mix democratically, with no perceptible rules. There seems to be no age limit for driver's licenses, and the smallest Lozians are simply more reckless additions of their elders. Thorby wondered if he would ever get out into space alive. A Lozian would come zipping toward Thorby on the wrong side of the street. There was no right side, squeal to a stop almost on Thorby's toes, zig aside, while snatching breath off his face and heart out of his mouth, and never touch him.
Thorby would jump. After a dozen escapes, he tried to pattern himself after his foster father. Captain Krause plowed stodily ahead, apparently sure that the wild drivers would treat him as a stationary object. Thorby found it hard to live by that faith, but it seemed to work. Thorby could not make out how the city was organized. Powered traffic and pedestrians poured through any opening, and the convention of private land and public street did not seem to hold. At first, they proceeded along an area which Thorby classified as a plaza. Then, they went up a ramp, through a building which had no clear limits, no vertical walls, no defined roof, out again and down, through an arch which skirted a hole. Thorby was lost. Once he thought they must be going through a private home. They pushed through what must have been a dinner party, but the guests merely pulled in their feet. Krause stopped.
We're almost there. Son, we're visiting the fracky who bought our load. This meeting heals the trouble between us caused by buying and selling. He has offended me by offering payment. Now we have to become friends again.
We don't get paid?
What would your grandmother say? We've already been paid, but now I'll give it to him free, and he'll give me the thorium just because he likes my pretty blue eyes. Their customs don't allow anything as crass as selling.
They don't trade with each other?
Of course they do, but the theory is that one fracky gives another anything he needs. It's sheer accident that the other happens to have money that he is anxious to press on the other as a gift, and that the two gifts balance. They are shrewd merchants, son. We never pick up an extra credit here.
Then why this nonsense?
Son, if you worry about why fracky do what they do, you'll drive yourself crazy. When you're on their planet, do it their way. It's good business. Now listen. We'll have a meal of friendship. Only they can't. Or they'll lose face. So, there will be a screen between us. You have to be present because the Losian son will be there. Only it's a daughter. And the fracky I'm going to see is the mother, not the father. Their males live in Perda, I think. But notice that when I speak through the interpreter, I'll use masculine gender.
Why?
Because they know enough about our customs to know that masculine gender means the head of the house. It's logical, if you look at it correctly.
Thorby wondered, who was head of the family, father or grandmother? Of course, when the chief officer issued an order, she signed it by order of the captain. But that was just because... No. Well, anyhow.
Thorby suddenly suspected that the customs of the family might be illogical in spots, but the captain was speaking.
We don't actually eat with them. That's another fiction. You'll be served a green, slimy liquid. Just raise it to your lips. It would burn at your gullet. Otherwise...
Captain Krause paused while Losian's scorcher avoided the end of his nose.
Otherwise, listen so that you will know how to behave next time. Oh, yes. After I ask how old my host's son is, you'll be asked how old you are. You answer 40.
Why?
Because that is a respectable age in their ears, for a son who is assisting his father.
They arrived and seemed still to be in public, but they squatted down opposite two Losians, while a third crouched nearby. The screen between them was the size of a kerchief. Thorby could see over it. Thorby tried to look, listen, and learn, but the traffic never let up. It shot around and cut between them with happy, shrill racket. Their host started by accusing Captain Krause of having lured him into a misdeed. The interpreter was almost impossible to understand, but he showed surprising command of scurrilous interlingua. Thorby could not believe his ears and expected that father would either walk out or start trouble. But Captain Krause listened quietly, then answered with real poetry. He accused the Losian of every crime from barratry to mopery and dopery in the spaceways. This put the meeting on a friendly footing. The Losian made them a present of the thorium he had already paid, then offered to throw in his sons and everything he possessed. Captain Krause accepted and gave away Sisu with all contents. Both parties generously gave back the gifts. They ended at status quo, each to retain as a symbol of friendship what each now had.
Belosian, many hundredweight of Virgaleaf, the trader, slugs of thorium. Both agreed that the gifts were worthless, but valuable for reasons of sentiment. In a burst of emotion, Delosian gave away his son, and Krausa made him, her, a present of Thorby. Inquiries followed, and it was discovered that each was too young to leave the nest. They got out of this dilemma by having the sons exchange names, and Thorby found himself owner of a name he did not want and could not pronounce. Then they ate. The horrid green stuff was not only not fit to drink, but when Thorby inhaled, he burned his nostrils and choked. The captain gave him a reproving glance. After that, they left. No goodbyes, they just walked off. Captain Krausa said meditatively while proceeding like a sleepwalker through the riot of traffic, "Nice people, for Fracky. Never any sharp dealing and absolutely honest. I often wonder what one of them would do if I took him up on one of those offers. Pay up, probably."
"Not really."
"Don't be sure. I might hand you in on that half-grown Losian." Thorby shut up. Business concluded, Captain Krausa helped Thorby shop and sightsee, which relieved Thorby, because he did not know what to buy, nor even how to get home. His foster father took him to a shop where interlingual was understood. Losians manufacture all sorts of things of extreme complexity, none of which Thorby recognized. On Krausa's advice, Thorby selected a small, polished cube, which, when shaken, showed endless Losian scenes in its depth. Thorby offered the shopkeeper his tokens. The Losian selected one and gave him change from a necklace of money. Then he made Thorby a present of shop and contents. Thorby, speaking through Krausa, regretted that he had nothing to offer save his own services the rest of his life. They backed out of the predicament with courteous insults. Thorby felt relieved when they reached the spaceport and saw the homely, familiar lines of old Sisu. When Thorby reached his bunkie, Jerry was there, feet up and hands back of his head. He looked up and did not smile. "Hi, Jerry."
"Hello, Thorby."
"Hit dirt?"
"No."
"I did. Look what I bought."
Thorby showed him the magic cube.
"You shake it, and every picture is different."
Jerry looked at one picture and handed it back. "Very nice."
"Jerry, what do you glum about? Something you ate?"
"No."
"Spill it!"
Jerry dropped his feet to the deck, looked at Thorby.
"I'm back in the computer room."
"Huh? Oh, I didn't lose status. It's just while I trained somebody else." Thorby felt a cold wind.
"You mean I've been busted?"
"No."
"Then what do you mean?"
"Maida has been swapped."